Welcome to Take It From The Iron Woman. My name is Susanne Müller, your host and the Iron Woman. This podcast is about empowering yourself and others to make real changes in the world. You will hear from everyday, smart, sophisticated, hip people like you and me. Not everybody has to be an Iron Woman to impress the world. Together, we will learn from the sports and business leaders how you can become a more successful person as an entrepreneur or a leader. It's one step at a time, one day at a time. Take your steps now. Take your big steps now. Join me on this journey to success. Hello and welcome. Today we invite Ilse from the Netherlands again and talk about her interesting work that she's doing. The work not everybody can do, but Ilse. So Ilse, hello. How are you today?
Hi, Susan.
What's happening in your world? Tell us a little bit. And for those people who have not been with us since last episode, who is Ilse that's coming to talk to us today?
Okay, well, I will introduce myself. I'm Ilse, born and raised in the Netherlands. I'm 36, almost 37 years old next week. I'm a mom of two boys, a five-year-old and a two-and-a-half-year-old, and married. Spent almost 5 years in New York City and Chicago, studying, working, and that's also where I met Susan, and I'm a social worker and coach. I work for an organization that you can compare a bit with the Child Protection Services / the Child Abuse and Neglect and Domestic Violence Hotline as a researcher. So that's what I do and who I am.
Wow, this is a difficult job in my opinion, and we're certainly very happy to have you to do this job. So how did you get to where you are today?
Well, that's a big question. Well, I think it all started when you're really, really young and you're in high school and you try to find a way like, okay, what do I want in life? And I already knew at a young age that I want to help people. But, you know, then you don't really know what helping is. And I started education as a cultural worker. Part of, you know, you always have to do a project. So what I did was with the youth in my village where I'm coming from, we did a lot with theater, dance, singing, all the creative sides. But I wanted to connect that to a charity. Mm-hmm. So I picked a charity, an organization that was founded by a guy from our village, and that was in Romania. So a year as a graduation project, I worked with all the young adults in my hometown with 100. But we're 100 young adults. We organized, we did a lot of things, and then we play a 2.5 hour play for charity, and we collected a lot of money. And then I got the opportunity to travel to Romania and see where the money went. So I went with a friend that's almost 18 years ago, and I lost, how we say it here, I lost my heart there. I was young, I was 18, and it is a little bit like how it works, you know, you hate it or you love it, and I loved it, and I knew, okay, I will be back here. So I came back 8 times, spent a lot of my vacations and a lot of hours and a lot of money to support that organization. I was young, and you learn a lot about yourself when you're in a country that is so poor that things are happening that you never ever knew that they exist in the world. And then I realized when I was there, because I had all these wild ideas of what I'm going to do in Romania with, I'm going to work with street kids. Like, oh, I'm going to do like soccer tournaments. I'm going to all the creative stuff. And I came there and it was not what their needs were. You know, their needs were like, okay, we are here with our heritage from all the communism that was going on years before. And people were not able to think about soccer or, you know, all these creative things because that was not what they learned. So I really had to adjust as young as I was, like, okay, what are their needs? And their needs were like basic needs. And then now looking back, it was like there were a lot of processes going on. It was part about myself being flexible, seeing what people really need instead of what you think is best, hearing people. And I think what is the main key was what I learned is that you help people by standing next to them and hear what they say, put an arm around them, but also sometimes just push them. You don't help people by thinking, oh, you're so poor and you're so sad, and because that will not change their life. change their life is, okay, what do you want? Who are you? And let people see that they are really rough situations there. But we were all people, so they have values, their dreams, and you have to see the opportunities for them and to make them, like, in all the, this was horrible, but they can make little steps forward. I really felt like equal, and I think that's what people always gave me as feedback, like, okay, you're just one of us, although you come from another country, you know, you are rich, and we are, you know, that's true, we are, where they come from, yes, we are super duper rich, but it doesn't matter, because we're all people. I think that's what I always try to, I think that is helping, and of course, I have another role, and I do other stuff, it's still the same, you know, I come at people's place, and the first thing that I want to do is, like, okay, I'm not a threat, although you probably think that I am, but I want to know your story, and from your story, we can see, okay, where can we find some equal part, and most of the time, that are their kids, if they have kids, and say, okay, how can we make your life better, and for your kids, to have, like, this set goal for them. Okay, my job is to come here and see if it's safe, and you want to be a good parent, and you don't want me to take your children, or first of all, you don't want me to step one foot in your house. But I think with the human interaction, that we're all humans and we're all equal, you can get some kind of steps forward, or at least a working relationship.
Can you maybe give us an example of what you did in Romania? It seems like the soccer and the art was two steps too much, maybe?
Yeah.
And since you went back 8 times, give us, like, a highlight. What happened there to illustrate?
Yeah, well, when I started, we didn't have, like, shelter or something. We started just with street work. Simple things that we did was go on the street in the early evening with some bread and, you know, Coca-Cola, Fanta. Just hang with them, just sit, be a part of them, and just talk about, hey, what's going on the streets? How's life here? What are you afraid of? And what kind of gang do you belong? What are the gangs? To get more understanding of what was going on the streets, but also, hey, you know, thank God things changed, but when I was there, was a lot of corruption also by the police. They don't want to have kids on the street because it's not good for your country, because they were then trying to be a part of the European Union. So there were no street kids. That's what they tried to...
Yeah, what was the ages of those kids that you...
Oh, there were, like, babies until, you know, you know, there were whole families on the streets the first time I was there, you know. I think the first evening that I arrived in Bucharest, I saw kids 6, 7 years old, all high on glue on the subway. And then I was with a social worker. I will never forget that picture, that kids, you know, so high, trying to tell you something. And what happened then, we made an appointment with a group a day later. We said, okay, you know, it was really a lot. So the social worker was like, okay, let's do that for tomorrow. We just arrived, you know, this is really, this is hard, trying to schedule something for tomorrow with some boys, and they will show you around, like, what their life is and what their needs are. So we scheduled some kind of appointment for the day after near the station. They didn't show up. So the social worker was like, okay, they didn't show up. You know, let me just walk, let us walk around and let's see who we bump into, because, you know, that's how it worked. And we found out that the police picked them up because they were begging, or they did something that was not okay, or they were on the streets and you cannot be there. So we just walked around and talked, and then the social worker was like, okay, we will see them tomorrow. And we did, because we were staying near the station with our hotel. The day later, we saw them, and they were all black and blue and all with crutches. And they told us, like, yeah, the police picked us up. They beat you up, but want to beat you up or do whatever. But if you cut yourself and you're bleeding, they think you're dirty. They don't want that. They don't want your blood on them. So that's what they did. And of course, that's what they do. The automutilation is for, you know, the hard feelings that you have to get them out. And something really beautiful is not maybe the right word, but what happened is that we had a lot of bandages, you know, all the things with us. So we said, oh, wait a minute, we will go back to the hotel. And what happens, you sit with boys like 14, 15, 16, so maybe older. And, you know, we were cleaning the wounds and put some bandage on them. And then you are real in contact. You know, we were not more than them. We were just like, okay, we feel sorry for you. And this is not what we want for you. But we can have some kind of conversation while we do this. And after that, we just had a lot of fun. Because for them, it was like, okay, we were young, they are young, they went through something really hard that night, but for them, you know, it could happen a day later, the same could happen. And we played some soccer in the park, And they said, we had a really great afternoon. And what is it? What do? You know, you give them attention, you hear them. Of course, you feel sorry for them, but you make them, let them feel like, okay, you're saving me, at least for the emotional part. And let's do things that you do when you're 14 or that age. Then you just play and you don't, for that 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you don't have to think about all the fear that is there and all the aggression that is on the streets. So I think that was one of the most, the small steps that I think that makes a big difference. And also for me as a person, that you think, hey, you don't have to do all the soccer tournaments and the arts and crafts and the games. This is what it is, human contact.
When you say beautiful, it's very profound and deep, but in a way, it's also very honest and simple. So sometimes we think too much and we have to do something that's out of this world. But basically what they need is just a human contact and maybe have some laughter. And you also mentioned listening. So I know you're also a coach. How can you use your coaching education to use for the job that you're doing in the Netherlands now?
In my job, I always have the part of something needs to change. As a coach, you try to talk with people and make them their, you know, their path, their decisions, come up with their own answers by asking a lot of questions. And in my job, it's always a little bit of both worlds. But if I come in like, okay, this was the incident was reported to us, and then just say, okay, but this is what was reported to us, but what's your story? And then talk about, okay, you know, but I hear, you know, relation problems. Tell me more of their own life. And but it has to happen very quick because we also want to see change, you know, especially when there are young kids. You say, you know, you want to see change. We cannot wait until you need a year to change your life. You don't, your kids don't have a year, you know, you need to hurry up. That's a little bit of the difficulty with the coaching theory and what we say, you know, what works best for coaching. But on the other hand, we also have kids that need safety and they need balance and they need an adult in their life who is available. Uh-huh. But I use it every day. You know, active listening, be in the present. I think that's also very important. Mm-hmm. Listen. What do they really say? What is behind the anger? What is behind the fear? So I use it every day.
So you're a coach, you're listening, you're present with them. But on the other hand, you're also a problem solver, and that's what you said, it has to go fast. Maybe in a coaching assignment we have more time and the people are in a way healthy, but in your situations you need to find a solution. Let's say the kids, they need to go to school or they need to be
they need a safe place to grow up. There is violence, you say, okay, the violence has to stop. You cannot say, okay, within a year it stops. No, it has to stop
right now.
So we make appointment, you know, we make rules with them, with, because I think that's works best. You can tell them there is no violence, but if they ignore that there is violence, it doesn't matter if I say it, because if you are not there yet, so then other things need to happen. You always try to give people insight in what happens, and I think it starts with, because we can get into an argument, you know, in a second with everybody. That's not not that difficult. I think the difficulty is listen, respect, a lot of respect for everybody. People are equal. People have right to make their own decisions, and from there you can talk,
find a common ground, and then build upon that. And I'm wondering, for all the listeners, so it seems like you have such a difficult job, in my opinion. How do you keep a balance? How can you keep sane and healthy and happy?
That's a good question. I think that's like a non-stop struggle, is not a good word, but it's a non-stop theme going on, because life works like a wave. It goes, you know, so in my work I have a few days that it's more behind a computer and it's more easy, and then like is there a crisis situation, so you're non-stop on top of high emotions, high pressure. And that's of course with kids the same, and in a marriage the same. So I know what works for me. I think that is for now. I do a lot of sports. I have a bit of a commute. What works for me is just, instead of calling, because it's easy, you know, to call a friend or to call a client or something, but to say, no, when I'm leaving work until I'm home, I put on the music that I like or a podcast or whatever, but it's for me, because so I can switch off. So when I'm home, I'm not nonstop in my head with work, because if when I'm home, I want to be there for my kids. Because what I found out, at least for me, is when work is too much in my personal life, I cannot focus enough on my kids, and that reflects on them, because when I'm here, my kids want my full attention, and if I'm constantly on my work phone or put the laptop on for work, I'm not there for them. And then, you know, I give them a hard time, but they also give me a hard time because they want my attention. Being physically active works for me, and sometimes I think it would be better for me to also do something more like mindfulness or yoga, but maybe I'm not there yet. I always did some in my life, but for now I love the boxing, boot camp, running, and sometimes just watch the most crappiest television ever. Watching TLC or something like that.
I think that's a very good advice. You said it, right? So you have to be present with your clients. Yep. You have to listen. But on the other hand, you also have to listen and be present with your kids and with your husband and your friends. What I also like is that you have a clear boundary from work to your private life. Yep. I think that's really important. Yeah.
Wow. It was always at times when I feel overwhelmed, you know, when you're more stressed, that you feel it in your body. Mm-hmm. I always try to go back, okay, what is going on? And what you see then is that because my work asks a lot from me, my private life, of course, as every mom, asks a lot from you, but then you don't have time to switch off and you don't have time for yourself, then I will feel it in my body. I'm not the happiest person, or you feel that you're not the person that you want to be, or your reactions are not how you want to be. And then I always have to go back, like, oh, where does it go wrong? And then you have to go back to, okay, these little things that you have to do again. Like, I didn't go to the gym 3 times a week. I was calling too much, or, you know, my work life came into my private life too much, or I had too much social, you know, I love social things, as you know me. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it can be too much if you're out every evening, or, you know, you go to the gym and you meet friends and you're everywhere. Then you, at one point, you don't have time to rest. And I think that's important now.
Mm-hmm. So many insights. So I love it. So mindfulness, yoga, boxing, bootcamp.
Yeah.
This is fantastic. Thank you so much for all your good advice today. Thank you so much, Ilse. And good luck with everything. I'm very happy that you are doing this great job and humanity needs you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What an interesting person with special superpower. Leave a comment and join us next week, Monday, for a new episode. Thank you for listening. Take it from the Iron Woman.